Hey, everybody, and welcome back to From Complex to Queens, Mason Avenue's Minor League Podcast. I'm Steve Slipa, and I'm joined this week by Lucas Vlahos and Thomas Henderson. How are you guys doing this week?
I'm doing well.
How are Pretty you? Good. Pretty good.
The Mets are actually on TV today.
Oh, wow. The weather's nice.
Yeah.
Mets. It's a good weekend.
Well, we're due for it's that time of year where, like, you wake up every morning and flip a coin, and it's either going to be 30 degrees out or 70. Yeah. I think we're due for some, like, cold-ass rain this week, which is the worst weather.
Yeah, I think I read flurries.
God damn it. Look, I love snow. Like, snow is awesome, and, like, warm rain is whatever, but cold sleety, slushy rain is just the worst.
Yeah, that's easily my least favorite weather.
It's just the fucking worst.
There's just no upside.
No.
It's all sadness.
You're cold and wet, and it doesn't even look pretty or give you something fun to play in.
Goddamn weather.
My dog also hates the rain, so she's going to be very unhappy.
Unhappy dog, unhappy life.
Uh-huh.
All right, well, here's something else that's pretty unhappy, I guess. It could have been a lot worse, though. On this date back in 1961, a B-52 bomber crashed near Yuba City, California. And it's a pretty big blunder to lose such a big, expensive plane like that. But what made it worse is the fact that the plane, this B-52 bomber, when it crashed, had two nuclear bombs on it.
Okay!
See, that's all.
So, yeah. Luckily, the safeties worked. Thank God that those safeties worked. Nothing went off. But, yeah, that's a big blunder. So, what Mets minor league blunders are we going to promote, extend, or trade today?
I got to tell you, I always think about where you're going with these, and I didn't know where you're going with that one at all.
Yeah, me neither.
What? Trade three nuclear bombs. Steve, no!
I actually thought you were going to talk about a different B-52 crash, because there's another very famous one in Maine in 1963.
There's an alarming amount of B-52 crashes, unfortunately.
Yeah. Heard you can actually walk around I assume you can't walk around the wreck of this one, because, you know, there were nuclear bombs inside it, but you can go to the crash site in Maine. It's pretty neat. Anyway, what are these Mets blunders?
The best, not to get too off topic here, but obviously the best B-52 crash is in Lake Mead, obviously.
Of course.
Top 10 anyway. B-52 crashes.
Yes.
All right, that's my BuzzFeed article for this week.
All right, so the first one we have is June 2015, when Luis Rivera, he forgot to name a bunch of relievers on his scorecard. And that forced him to use position players as relievers during a 15-8 Kingsport loss. Next up, we have July 2019, when there was a fireworks show on the 4th of July that caused a brush fire outside of First Data Field in St. Lucie, which was not the first time that this has happened. So they actually knew that this kind of thing could happen, but they did the same thing twice. And last up is September 2006, when the Norfolk Tides signed a player development contract with the Baltimore Orioles because the Mets, more specifically the Wilpons, pissed away basically a 40-year-old relationship with them over, you know, player assignments and such.
Okay, so my answer is pretty simple to this one. The bushfires are – let me rephrase this. How are we ranking them? Are we supposed to, like, extend the worst one? Is that going for here?
I guess that's how it would work, yeah.
Then we're extending the bushfire because that's both a danger to public health and also it happened once before.
That's the funniest part about – well, not funny, but, like, they knew that this was going to happen and they were like, yep, fireworks.
And not even a long time either. It happened in 2017, which is 2 years before.
Hey, remember that thing we did that almost, like, burned the forest down around us? We're going to do that again. Will Ponnery, yeah, that you should promote that. I'm going to be honest, the Kingsport one is kind of stupid. Like,
it's just funny, like, how could you do that funny?
Yeah.
Right. Well, first, like, obviously the manager fucked up, but also, I'm going to say the wrong league, aren't I? Kingsport is in the, I don't know what league Kingsport was in. Fuck. Someone
Appalachian.
Help me. Thank you. It's a fucking appy game. Yeah, the umpires can't say, well, yeah, you fucked up, but it's fine. Just let the reliever, like, really? You're gonna be that much of a stickler about the rules and the appy? Come on, man.
At the end of the day, it's one loss. It's just egg on your face.
It's also a first of all, how many fans are going to a fucking Appy League game? Second, how many of those fans are gonna care if somebody submitted the lineup card wrong and they let them fix it? Point, it exists to develop players.
Yep. And managers, too.
Yeah, that's true. You should just, like, let them fix it.
God, yeah, man. Like, come on, man. It's not the fucking major leagues. It's the appy. Let the relievers pitch. The bushfire one is just amazing, though. Like, that's bad.
There's so many different aspects of that make it great. It's the fact that they did it before. They, even though there was a fire outside, they were still playing the game, which is pretty hilarious.
I remember that too, yes, I remember that. There was like clips of the game going on, and it's just like a fire in the background.
Yeah. Isn't like Smokey the Bear out here saying only you could prevent forest fires or some shit?
The Mets can start forest fires.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, that is very true.
You also think there'd be, like, a park service issuing warnings, like, because I always saw signs growing up saying, hey, it's dry, you can't light a campfire. No one's calling up the Mets and saying, hey, it's dry as fuck out. Don't shoot off some fireworks, maybe.
No, it's Florida. They don't believe in science.
That's true. Damn government can't tell me what to do with my fireworks.
They sure do love their fireworks down south.
The weird moment where you hear banging outside and you don't know if it's a gunshot or fireworks, and only one of them is illegal, and it's not the gunshot.
Also, an underrated part of the Mets losing, we didn't talk about them losing the Tides, is that...
Yeah, I think that's the most...
It created a snowball effect to ending up in me staying up till 2 a.m. watching games in Las Vegas.
That's true.
Not a fan of that.
So writing reports on like Aaron Harang or whoever was on those rosters at that time, because it was like a bunch of like 32-year-old ex-major leaguers. So like the snowball effect of pissing away that relationship, then I think they went to Buffalo and then also made them mad.
Yes.
And then had to go to Vegas and then be stuck there until they bought Syracuse. Like it could have been so easy. For everyone involved, for them to just stay in Norfolk forever, because that would have been what it was.
It's what it should have been.
Yeah.
It's very Metsian. I had the advantage of being in college in California at the time, so.
Oh, yeah, you were chilling.
Yeah, I was like, oh, okay, this is fine. Yeah, it was great for recaps, too, because people would always want to trade out of their West Coast game recaps. So I'd, like, do every recap for a week and then not have to do one for 2 months.
I was never a fan of, you know, those Matt Oberstee tying the game in the ninth inning.
Oh, and God. Then,
yeah, you're almost mad that they tied it. Because
You're not almost mad. You're 100% mad. Like, just lose the game, please. I also wonder if that, like, I mean, obviously, I mean, oddly enough, that coincided with a time when the Mets were pretty successfully developing pitchers. But you have to think that Vegas is not an optimal development environment, and I wonder if that's screwed with anybody to some degree. Like, maybe it messed with I don't want to say that Ahmed Rosario would be a better major leaguer if he didn't go to Vegas, but maybe he goes somewhere where he's forced to work on his pitch recognition,
mm-hmm.
right, where that flaw gets exposed more before the major leagues, and he learned, right? So you can imagine that maybe if they had stayed in Norfolk, the developmental environment would have been better.
It's definitely not a good park, like, developmental park for pretty much anyone because of the...
No. Right. Because it both screws your pitchers because they can't throw their breaking stuff and they get hammered. And it screws your hitters because their flaws don't get exposed because they tap the ball and it goes 500 feet. Or, and even the infield is super fast because it's so hard and dry.
The old home run bunt.
Yeah, exactly. And like, we're hitting that, like 500 foot bomb to center field was fun.
And like, you're not even really like preparing them for, it's not like they're going to the Rockies or something. Like, they're going to New York where they don't have to deal with any of that stuff. So, like, you're going from a place in AAA where the altitude is going to mess with you, and then you go to New York where you're in a pitcher's ballpark, and, like, it's fine. And so it's probably jarring for players who aren't used to that stuff.
You make an interesting point. So don't the Rockies have, like, Colorado Springs as their AAA affiliate? Or they used to. I don't know what they do now.
Yeah, they did.
Not that the Rockies are a particularly intelligent organization, but I wonder.
They're in Albuquerque now.
Yeah, right, so something similar. I wonder if they could pursue a strategy where every level of their minor leagues was at altitude or something. I wonder if that would help or hurt.
Because you could prepare your pitchers for like throwing their sliders and their four seamers and the hitters for this is what altitude is like.
That'd I mean, I know Jeff used to complain about seeing Brendan Rodgers 13 times a year because the Rockies AA affiliate was in Hartford, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yard goats. I don't know if they're still, if that's still Rockies
that's
or not.
Still them.
Yeah.
You can't stop the yard goats. Once they've been unleashed, that's it. Just like Rumble Ponies. They tried to stop the Rumble Ponies. It didn't work.
You just can't stop it. The trash, wasn't there a Trash Panda team?
Yes.
Yes.
Excellent.
Once you let things like that out of the box, they don't go back in very easy.
Teamy McTeam face, is that where we're going?
Yeah. You know, the goddamn millennials are growing up now, or the Generation Z is growing up now, so,
yeah.
So we might see that soon.
I think I'm technically a millennial. I don't know the distinction anymore.
Millennial was like mid-80s to like 2000-ish.
I'm a millennial, yes.
Yeah, late millennial.
The barometer for millennial life, or if you remember 9/11 vividly, then you're
yeah, pretty much. That's about right. All right, so we are now in week two of spring training. Well, week two of spring training just ended, mm-hmm. And pretty much everyone that we might cover on the show got cut or reassigned to AAA. So I guess that's the show. So good night, folks.
So apparently, Tim Britton tweeted this. That they could still play in spring games.
Yes, they will still be
being reassigned, which I think is kind of, I think that's good. Like, that's a good, I don't remember that if that was always the rule.
I believe that was always the case. You could call guys over from the minor league side sometimes late in spring training.
Right, you have to like borrow them.
Right. Yeah. I vaguely remember seeing Conforto in like 2015 that way, like before he, like in 2015 spring training. So I think that's a fairly normal thing. It's obviously different now because there's no minor league spring training or whatever.
Right. That's the biggest thing is that minor league camp is not going to be starting until they break camp and go north in like April and they have that first month. So in the meantime, they're just going to kind of be doing workouts and making periodic, cameos during regular spring training games. But on the pitching side, they officially re-signed Matthew Allen, Oscar De La Cruz, Riley Gilliam, JT Ginn, Harold Gonzalez, Trevor Hildenberger, Tyler McGill, Steven Nogasek, Marcel Renteria, Jad Robinson, and Tom Wendell. And on the hitting side, they officially re-signed Francisco Alvarez, Pico Armstrong, Brett Beatty, Drew Ferguson, Brian Riccio, Nick Meyer, Hayden Senger, and Mark Vientos. And in addition, Franklin Kilame, Sean Reed Foley, and Thomas Zupucki were all optioned to AAA. So, sucks we're not going to get to see all those prospects in camp. But, I mean, you know, fewer games this year. And there are a bunch of guys that are legitimately fighting for roster spots. So, those are the guys that you know, need to get that actual play time, because it's more important for the team to see guys like Kevin Pillar and Jonathan VR and Al Morrow and Drury and whoever else to see.
God,
actually...
I'm just realizing how big a problem PR and VR on the same team is.
I know. I'm
Come
like,
on.
Just start reversing them, Kevin PR and Jonathan Villar. but yeah, it's more important for the Mets to see what those guys still have in the tank, and mm-hmm. you really need to give them, you know, the most at bats.
I'm disappointed that, I mean, we've been. Thomas Tupucki might be the most disappointing part of this, I think, because he's been kind of shrouded in a cloud of what the hell is happening for what feels like 2 years. And the only look we got at him, supposedly he hit 95, but it was also with a 2-pixel camera at the first
The camera
game.
Was on the rover in Mars, so
yeah.
we didn't actually
yes.
see anything.
The Curiosity rover turned its camera to the sky and shot back at the Met game.
Yeah, those
I really want
guys,
to see him again, yeah. just to see what it looked like from a even from the TV angle would have been like 100 times better than what we got.
Right.
Zipaki, Killame, and Sean Reed Foley. Those are all guys that are in the upper minors, and you could make a case, depending on how they could have done if they were in camp longer, that you could have made the case that they could have gotten roster spots out of spring training. It is a little shocking that they didn't get longer looks.
I'm surprised Hildenberger didn't get a longer look, too.
Yeah.
He looked pretty good in the one inning that I saw him. And obviously, that's just one inning. That's a load of nothing. But, like, he's a vet already, so I'm surprised they didn't give him a bit of a longer leash just to be like, hey, what do you have left, you know?
Mm-hmm. Especially since the bullpen, at least the bullpen picture in my eyes, should be extremely wide open given
I
how...
agree with you.
I mean, I don't want to be since when are we not pessimists, right? I don't want to be a total downer here, but Familia and Betances have looked,
especially
toast.
Betances.
Yeah, Betances. Yeah, like, and this is a bullpen that's extremely thin to begin with. They honestly should have signed Shane Green 2 weeks ago, but like, give these vet relievers a longer leash so that. You could tell Betances, sorry, man, you just don't got it. We're going to go with someone else. And honestly, give guys like I can get optioning Killame and Reed Foley and Sapucki to an extent, right, because they're real prospects. But someone like McGill, who I'm not saying isn't a real prospect, but like he's
no,
not
I know
someone you care about long-term in terms of service time, whatever. He's an up-and-down arm. So keep him in camp and see if he can give you – 10, 20 innings over the first couple months.
Well, the Mets have never been good at roster management when it comes to the bullpen.
No.
Unfortunately.
No, they have not.
But yeah, I wish we had more concrete stuff to report about, but basically we just have a week's worth of intermittent playing time that's not enough to draw really any conclusions about anything from anyone.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And just the kind of stray comments and observations that we had last week, that's pretty much it. Because, I mean, what happened like last week? Ronnie Mauricio got like a pinch running assignment or something. I think that's really it. Like,
yeah.
I can't think of anything. So,
I mean, what's the recap on these guys, right? Like, Ronnie Mauricio is now a Giant. Pete Crow Armstrong is very fast. Brett Beatty, Batty?
Swing.
Is it Batty? Beatty? Have we decided?
Beatty.
It's
Beatty.
Beatty. Brett Beatty looked really nice. Did we even get to see Matt Allen?
I think he pitched one inning.
He definitely pitched, but I don't know if that game was on.
No.
Like, he might have been the guy, because I'm a Matt Allen fanboy. Like, I really wanted to see more Allen.
He got, like, bat-pipped out of two runs or something.
Yeah, whatever. Okay, so no conclusions there. Alvarez looked a little overmatched,
yeah.
which doesn't mean anything. He's 19 years old or whatever. And Sapucki might be throwing 95, but we don't know.
I do want to say that I like that some of the guys like Mauricio still was young and wasn't necessarily overmatched. Like he wasn't getting blown away by anything.
No,
like he didn't. I don't think he hit anything for real. I think he had like five singles or whatever it was, maybe a double or two. But still, that's very encouraging to me.
Hey, he's making contact. It's like a win.
Yeah, like he's making contact with major leaguers and stuff at like 19. Like, sign me up for that, you know?
Yep. I think regardless of where you are on the Beatty hype train, I think it's fair to say he was the most impressive of the bunch in the limited samples we saw.
He was definitely the dude who I got the most, like, eye-opened about. Like, I think, I said this last week, I'm pretty sure I did, but I think he got underrated because of who he came along with. Like, that's the Matt Allen draft, and yep. Beatty was kind of like a throwaway, like, top 11 pick or whatever it was. But the swing is there. Like, you can see it, I think. I think the swing is pretty much there, and I think he showed that in camp.
What year was that the 2018 draft?
19
draft. Time has no meaning.
Well, after 2020.
It was Brody's first draft.
2020, 2019. Come on, Sport Track, work with me here, please. Please,
Beatty, Wolf, Allen, bunch of seniors.
Yeah.
I'm not a premium member. I'm trying to remember if Beatty was was under slot or not. I think he might have been a little bit.
I think he was slightly under.
Yeah.
Like a few hundred thousand.
So nothing significant. I mean, enough to contribute to the Matt Allen fund. Look, I know we've made this point specifically. Brody Van Wagenen did a lot of stupid shit, but their drafts look pretty good.
Yeah. It was an interesting strategy that I think is actually kind of – so the Mets just drafted all those seniors that they would just draft them as juniors, and they would be as equal level talent-wise. So you might as well draft them as seniors and, like, save the money there to really go hard on your first three picks, on your money picks, really.
Yeah, I mean, Mets have had that issue the last couple of years, so you might as well – They're doing it anyway, so they might as well just do it effectively and get something out of it.
And my whole argument there is that there are, in every draft class, there are several seniors that are maybe not top prospects, but at some level interesting, or late breakouts, or injured guys, or maybe quick-moving relievers or something. And even if you're drafting the quote-unquote priority senior signs, they're still signing way under slot.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, two years ago, 2019, when they drafted Jake Mangum, he was considered like the best senior baseball player out there, and he signed for like $25,000.
Yeah,
whatever it was. So,
unfortunately, they just don't have leverage.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. What are you gonna do? Go to the indie ball?
Exactly. Which is a problem with the draft altogether. Like, that's not a good thing. But
yeah,
the Mets are used it to their advantage pretty much the last.
I think a pretty easy fix for that would be just add a higher minimum bonus, yeah, right? Like, you get at least 100K or whatever.
If you make the minimum higher than the senior sign being a senior sign that late is fine, because they're still getting a decent amount of money and a living wage for the minor leaguers, then it's like.
Yep.
Well, that'll never happen.
Oh, we haven't talked about Ginn throwing, which is nice.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot.
I didn't even notice he was in camp.
Yes, they added him late. They added him. He hasn't been in camp very long, for sure. But he's, like, throwing and stuff. Like, he was working out with Syndergaard, and then he did, there were pictures of him throwing at camp. Obviously, he didn't play in the game because he's not ready, but that was a pick that I really liked because he wouldn't be there where they picked if he didn't have Tommy John. They really bought on the, he's, once he recovers, he'll be a better prospect, which is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
1 year out from TJ, so we should be, he should be, I mean, he's about in line with, lined up with Syndergaard's.
Yeah,
I cannot talk. Lined up with Syndergaard's recovery, roughly.
About,
you know, there's that great story about, was it Lugo learned to change up from Santana when they were both rehabbing their TJ, right? Something like that. Maybe it wasn't Lugo. Someone. I mean, I've got no problem with JT Ginn hanging out with Noah Syndergaard while they're rehabbing Tommy John from Tommy John.
Yeah, I mean, they paired. Sure. They told Allen to spend a lot of time with DeGrom. They have Ginn spend a lot of time with Syndergaard. It can't make things worse.
Absolutely.
It's smart for everyone involved, I think.
Absolutely, yes.
I might have reversed that, actually. No, Allen's got the bigger frame, right? But I guess he doesn't throw like, no one throws like Syndergaard, I suppose. But
All right, so a few days ago, Major League Baseball announced that they're going to be testing a bunch of rule changes in the minor leagues this year. None of the changes are guaranteed to be implemented in the major leagues, but the MLB thought that the issues that the changes were going to address were serious enough to merit being looked at and fooled around with. One interesting thing about the rules, I thought, is that, and we'll get into all the individual ones in a second, but they're not being unilaterally implemented. Basically, every level is getting one rule to test out, with the exception of low A. Down there, certain leagues, certain divisions, they'll be getting certain rules, and others will be getting others. But, in a vacuum, I could see how that would make sense. Test one rule per league, per level, whatever. But I could see it causing some weirdness because baseball doesn't exist in a vacuum, and you have players that are moving up and down throughout the year. So imagine if you're a player who gets promoted and you go from having to keep one new rule in mind to now throwing all that out, and now you have another rule you're going to have to keep in mind, or a guy that gets traded, or a guy that's doing rehab, whatever, and he's shuffling throughout the system. Luckily, nothing that they're implementing is like game breaking or anything like that, but it's still something you'd think that they would think about beforehand. But clearly, Major League Baseball does not think very far in advance.
I also saw, I cannot take credit for this point, this was Jeff tweeting, but the combination of removing levels of the minor leagues and now also adding these rule changes. Think about, you could have been a dude who would normally have spent like the whole year in GCL or the Appy, and now you might go from low A to double A and not only have to deal with that level of talent disparity, but also three different rules at each level.
That's crazy.
A lot to take in.
I think the biggest thing for me is that everything Major League Baseball has done has said this, but this really highlights it, is this isn't, the minor leagues is not about development. It's about testing what they should do with the game. And that sucks. Because as much as, like, I understand they don't want to throw, like, no pickoffs to the major league pitchers now, because it'll be a whole thing, like, the poor dude who has to, like, develop and try to make his way to the majors in the first place has to now do all this. Like, these leagues should be about finding the next major league players, not about
why they bought the Atlantic League a couple of years ago.
Right, that made a ton of sense.
Players go from the Atlantic League to the majors too, and like it's all those rules got all weird for like a year, whatever it was.
Mm-hmm. I think on some level you need to test stuff somewhere.
Yes. It just sucks because I want the minors to be solely about development, and it's just never going to be that way.
No. I think there are things you can test in the minors as well. Like, for instance, the bigger bag rule, I think, is a fine thing to test in the minors.
Mm-hmm.
Also, a brief point on that. All the people who are saying it makes the distance between the bases smaller have, like, never done geometry. You just leave the inner corner of the bag where it is, and it expands outward from the diamond. This isn't that complicated. It's still 90 feet, assuming that's how they've done it, which is the only way that makes sense.
I think that's how it's done.
So that's fine, but like the pickoff move thing is, guys need to learn how to pick throw a pickoff.
Well, let's get into everything. So the first rule change is going to be taking place in AAA baseball. So that's going to affect the Syracuse Mets. And as we're saying, the bases are going to be larger. They're going to be 18 inches instead of 15. And they're going to have a less slippery surface. Honestly, I think it's a big shrug. Like you're saying, this is not going to change the game fundamentally in any way.
This is about collisions, right? Less collisions at bases and stuff?
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, I think this is mostly a health thing and also maybe kind of a base stealing thing. Like, it's easier to get to do cool slides. So I see no downside to this personally.
I can't see how anyone would. I mean, what
It just won't affect the game as much, like, visually, I think, too. Like, I'm not, like, I don't know if I'd ever notice the base being a little bigger.
Right. No, unless they're, like, comically, like, funny large.
10-foot base.
In my head, though, it's, like, a huge base. Like,
right. I mean, think about the protective pitcher hats that they had with...
Now, those were noticeable.
Right. So, I mean, if the base is going to be like this, then wait a minute. We need to take a step back, but...
See, I think we all might, or Met fans at least, might have a bias against those hats just because it was freaking Alex Torres.
Yes. Or the David Wright batting helmet after he got the concussion.
That wasn't good either.
So, I can see how, I guess, this could be a bad thing, but only aesthetically. All right, so I don't think that's going to really have much of an effect on anything.
No.
The next change, it's going to be taking place in all of AA baseball, so that's going to affect the Binghamton Rumble Ponies. And all four infielders are required to have their cleats within the outer boundaries of the infield dirt when the pitch is delivered.
Man, fuck this.
Yeah, not a fan of this at all. I think it attacks the strategy of baseball. You know, if I want to position my middle fielder in the outfield to have four outfielders out there, that's my gamble. I'm rolling the dice, and if it works, great. I'm a great strategist, and if it doesn't, I'm an idiot. But no reason I can't try, you know?
So with the shift, I'm of two minds. Either it's banned completely, or you let people do whatever they want. Like, these half rules, to me, don't make any sense, because it's just going to, like, I don't know. Just either let people shift completely, or ban it outright. One or the other. Like, I don't know if I have a shift take enough to want it banned or not banned, but just do it completely. Don't do it halfway, is my opinion.
I am vehemently anti-shift, right? Like,
oh, you would just have them all play straight up?
No, I'm anti-shift.
Oh, okay, I got you.
I despise the ban the shift people.
Mm-hmm.
It's idiotic to me. Like the positions on the baseball diamond that we played at 10 years ago are just as arbitrary, right? Like, that's where we used to think the optimal positions were. Turns out, once we got a little smarter, those aren't the optimal positions anymore. It's silly to me, right? Like, if you want to force more balls in play, deaden the ball, lower the mound, do something like that, but
move the mound back.
Right, like don't take out one of the few interesting bits of strategy in baseball.
And that literally is their goal. The article on MLB.com about the changes, it says that Major League Baseball's goal is literally to increase the batting average of balls in play, to skew things so that batters have more of a chance of logging a hit.
And like, I don't necessarily think that's wrong, because I think there's too many strikeouts. Because I think pitchers throw too hard. Like, Jacob DeGrom's throwing 102 now. Like, for the most part, that's just, at some point, pitchers are going to get too good for hitters to hit.
Right.
Well, so, if pitchers can get better.
Yeah.
Hitters need to get better too, man.
I mean, at some point, like, if someone's throwing one, if someone, like, figures out how to throw even harder than that, then I don't even know how you're going to hit it. You know,
I mean, it also becomes an issue of sequencing, right? It just if it is this hard to get a hit, not due to BABIP, due to how good pitchers are, it's not going to be stringing three or four hits together to get a run is no longer an effective strategy.
Yes.
Your best strategy is to swing as hard as you can so that when you do get a mistake and get a hold of it, it goes over the fence.
Which is what baseball is now, is striking out or hitting a home run.
Right.
The two strategies.
And if you think that's not aesthetically pleasing, that's fine. But I don't think banning the shift addresses the actual issue. And B, it's arbitrary and silly as is, right? That's just my take.
Don't disagree. All right, the next change will be taking place in all of High A, so it's going to affect the Brooklyn Cyclones. And all pitchers must first step off the rubber before attempting a pickoff.
God, so that's weird. High A, Brooklyn Cyclones?
I know, right? So in effect, this mainly affects left-handed pitchers, and it eliminates like a snap throw kind of semi-bulk move that a lot of them do. I really don't have any kind of issues with this. It seems like something that would definitely have more of an impact in the major leagues if it's implemented, but it's so rare that you hear about a guy in the minor leagues who has like a good pickoff move that I don't think it's going to really have much of an impact. Maybe in like AAA, where you have guys with like major league experience, but at high A, you're not going to really have that many guys that this is going to be impacting too much.
So I actually saw something. Hannah Kaiser wrote about this. I don't know if I'm going to verbatim read it or just sum it up, but she put it on her Twitter.
Sum it up. I don't want to get sued.
No. I'm literally looking at her Twitter account right now. And she screenshot it from an article she wrote about the Atlantic League in 2019 when they changed all the rules. And a pitcher on the Ducks was basically like, people just stole on me. It was unstoppable. Because as a lefty, the only way I could keep them on was by doing the am I going to pick you off or not routine. But now that that's out of the window, they just stole as soon as I moved. So he would give up like 8 stolen bases a game.
Yikes.
So I wonder if it becomes so much of a advantage in the other direction towards the base runners that the rule kind of overcorrects what – because this rule is about getting more steals into the game because steals are basically like – it's just not efficient to – it's not a smart way to play baseball, and that's what everyone's doing now. But – I wonder if it's going to swing the pendulum too far in the other direction. Like,
yeah.
Just at some point, like, if all people do is steal on you all day, then it's not fun either. Like, that's also aesthetically not fun.
Oh, so like the average game with Noah Syndergaard pitching against the Nationals?
Yeah. I mean, and that sucks. Like,
sucks for us.
Yeah, of course. But, like, multiply that times, like, 5, you know? So.
Yeah. I think you're pretty correct there. I mean, this is one that I'd like to see where the equilibrium lands, right? Because this is – so, for instance, bigger bags does need to be tested, IMO, just implement it. This is definitely one that I think needs to be tested because there's probably an equilibrium you land at. And then the question is this equilibrium too extreme or not? Right. I like the premise, though. Like, I really love stolen bases. For better or worse, my favorite player growing up was Jose Reyes. This was pre the terrible off the field stuff.
I mean, at that time, it was fine.
Right. Like, it was because it was fun. This dude's a fucking lightning in a bottle. He's going to get on first, steal 2 bases, and walk home. It's great.
Dudes like Juan Pierre were, like, good for the game. Mm-hmm. Like, he would bunt and then steal 2 bases, and it's like, hell yeah. You know, like, that was fun.
And unfortunately, the math says that if you're not stealing at a 70% rate, it's not efficient. And if this is a way to make stealing easier and therefore make it a viable strategy again for more guys, I'm all for it. It's just like you said, does it swing the pendulum too far the other way?
Mm. Well, let's get to the next rule because it also affects – I think this is going to have more of an effect on stolen bases. And this rule is going to be taking place in all of low A, so it's going to affect the St. Lucie Mets. And pitchers are going to be limited to just 2 pickoff attempts per batter per plate appearance.
I didn't know about this rule.
Yes. So if a pitcher makes a 3rd pickoff attempt, if the runner is not caught and thrown out, then it's ruled a balk and everybody gets awarded an extra base.
That's interesting.
I almost like this one more, honestly.
I agree because you could still hold someone on without picking them off.
Right. I like this one, I think.
The threat is there until you pick off twice, and how many times do people do that in an at-bat now?
Yeah, I think this is more of a conceptual thing than it – because how rare is it that you see pitchers really getting fixated on guys and actually throwing over at the base like a million times? Like,
Well, think about when that happens, how annoyed everyone is.
Right.
The crowd just starts booing.
Right, exactly. After 1 or 2 times, then right, the crowd will start booing and – you know, maybe once every other game or so, even less. I don't know. Then, you have situations like that.
I mean, we also are Mets fans, so they're like the slowest team in the universe.
Mets,
anyway,
that's
so.
A very good point.
But this one, I think, I mean, this is arguably the most fun in baseball. It's like a really tense at bat where there's the mind game between pitcher and mm-hmm. batter, right? This is kind of instituting another mind game between pitcher and runner, right? And sure, there might already be one, a bit of a mind game between pitcher and runner. But this definitely makes it more interesting. I didn't realize this was the one they implemented at low A. I think I like this one.
It's, you know, I think that too, you know, I think that the issue is the amount of attempts that the pitcher gets. I don't, sure. I mean, I'm not saying that two is an issue. I'm just saying that's what I think would make it, I am in favor of it or not in favor. I think two is fine. If the third one is, you know, not successful, it's a balk, whatever. Okay. If, you know, it was just one pickoff attempt, I would not be okay with
one
that.
One is too few. One is
yes.
Few.
And if they want to make a three attempts and the fourth is a balk, okay, I'm fine with that too. You know, I don't think any of that it's too, none of that is too excessive. But I get that you want to, you know, limit the fixation on the runner and you don't want him throwing over a million times. Not that it happens, you know, too often.
So my one complaint here, so similar to the high A one, I think this is another rule where you need to see where the equilibrium lands and then judge it based on that. But I think they did this in the wrong order. The lowest level of the minors should effectively, if you're going to test a rule that's effectively you cannot throw a pickoff, that should be implemented at the lowest level of the minors. Because you're going to have dudes who are at low A throwing pickoffs, go to high A, and subconsciously throw a pickoff and have it be a balk.
Yeah, that's part of the bizarreness of these. All the rules are going to be different at each level. It's some dude is going to balk in the first inning because he forgot that the rule's different, you know? Like, and that's not fun for anyone.
No.
He's going to have to get reminded. There's going to be a big sign behind home plate. You can't pick off or something.
No, it's got to be behind. It's got to be up the first base line.
So no, that's true. That's true.
They could write it.
Right.
They could write it on the giant new bases.
Or have better, no, but the first base coach is for the offense. Shoot. Yeah, you just gotta put, like, put it on the wall down the first base line. No pickoffs in big letters.
That's gonna be what the Green Monster has on it when the it just says no pickoffs on it, and they're like, oh man.
But yeah, both of these things together, I can appreciate trying to bring back that aspect of the game, because like you were saying, Jose Reyes is your favorite player. Same thing. Like, Jose Reyes was so fun to watch. And you just, I remember I went to a game, it was the last game that I went to in 2008, which is not a good year. September 2008 was not a good year.
No.
But it was a game against the Cubs. And the Mets ended up losing it, of course. But it was the funniest thing was Jose Reyes was, the bases were loaded. And Jose Reyes was at third base, and Carlos Delgado was up at bat. And because Delgado always pulls the ball, they had that Delgado shift. There literally was not a third baseman. And Jose Reyes was literally walking halfway down the third baseline to home plate, and there was nobody to hold him on. And the pitcher, Carlos Zambrano, had to keep stepping off the bag and walking over to third base to get him to, like, go back. And then Carlos Delgado eventually hit a grand slam. Because Reyes got in Zambrano's head by taking such huge leads off the third base. And I can definitely appreciate that Major League Baseball wants to bring the running game, give it a little bit more prominence, because that's one thing that I'm not a fan of advanced statistics and sabermetrics, is that, you know, like, you know, stolen bases and the running game is kind of inefficient when you look at it, so it should just be minimalized. Maybe mathematically that is correct, but it's just such an exciting and fun part of the game.
It's, you know? It's both true and sucks that it is that way.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Like, yep. I was just looking this up. In 2019, so the last full season, only 15 people in baseball stole more than 20 bases. Like,
wow.
The league leader was Malik Smith with 46, and the second place and second was VR with 40. Which the Mets have both of them. But, like, like, it's just gone from the game pretty much at this rate. And it sucks because it's fun. Mm-hmm. Like, I understand why a team would be, like, going station to station is safer because that's how you secure the runs. But also, this isn't entertainment. I'm watching this for entertainment as much as I'm watching it for the Mets to win. Like, I want both.
Yep, exactly. All right, so now the next rule is going to affect low A West teams only. And as a side note, the season is starting in about a month.
Low A West League.
Yes. We still don't have actual names for any of these leagues. And we're starting in a month. But I guess we still don't have confirmation that there's going to be a DH or whatever either. So
that's true.
I don't know. Major League Baseball needs to get its shit together. But in the low A West, which the Mets don't have any teams, so it's not something that's going to impact our watching of the game. Instead of the 20-second pitch clock that's currently in place, they're going to have a 15-second pitch clock. Pitchers can still, you know, step off the rubber and fake whatever issues before going back on and, you know, resetting it. So that workaround is still there. So
shoes constantly untied.
Yeah. As a non-professional, non-pitcher, I don't know if shaving off 5 seconds is going to really have an impact on the battery to like call a game. But I don't know.
It seems a little quick, but I mean, I don't see the harm in testing it.
I don't see how it's going to be a game changer, game breaker. I mean, maybe it could be. Maybe everybody's going to universally complain it's not enough time to get on board with each other. But
yeah, that's possible.
The 20 second pitch clock definitely did streamline and quicken things a little bit. And in the minors, especially, sometimes there are games that are just horrible slogs that you really just want to like hurry the hell up. So I have no real issue with 15 instead of 20. But you know, if the actual pitchers and the actual catchers have problems, then you know, I would obviously believe them.
Weirdly, I kind of wish there was a way to so if this rule were ever to make it to the major league level, I'd want there to be a way to have it like turned off. That makes sense. Like innings 1 through 8, yeah, pitch clock, or 1 through 7, pitch clock.
Oh, okay, I get you.
But then those
like high leverage situations.
Yeah, do you remember that at bat? I think it was in 2018, maybe 2017. It was Andrew Miller when he was on the Yankees against Tulowitzki when he was with the Blue Jays and still fun. Maybe it was even earlier than that, right? But it's like a 12-pitch at bat, and there's a minute between every pitch, and you're on the set, but it's like, this is great. I am extremely engaged in this, right? So I don't want to lose that entirely, but for the first 6 innings, I don't need Steve Traxel taking 2 minutes per pitch. Or, who's
Pedro
like a
Baez taking forever.
Yeah.
So that's something I think that we've kind of lost sight of a little bit, because broadcasting has kind of just become like a commercialized commodity. If you had a guy like a Vin Scully or Gary Keithenron, who we are lucky to have that a lot of other places don't, if you have guys like that who could fill in those gaps, if you are literally having an at-bat that's very high tension and every pitch is, you know, a minute between pitches, if you have good broadcasters, you could fill in those gaps and make it engaging instead of just kind of like dull silence and whoever the broadcasters would be just kind of giving you inane details or whatever. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
That's something at the game back in the day when there was more of an emphasis on creating kind of flowery commentary about everything, definitely had the edge as compared to today's more sanitized, commercialized version of the product.
I mean,
also,
definitely...
to be honest, we probably need a batter clock too, because they take forever to
That's true.
Plots. It's just like, guys,
Dubo,
hurry up.
Didn't David used to do, I called him David. Jesus. Didn't Wright used to do like both his gloves in between every pitch? It's like, come on, man, just get in the fucking box, please.
Yeah, like he would do all this. Like a lot of people do that. And it's just like, come on, guy, hurry up.
Tulo, again, was someone else who took forever between pitches.
No more Garcia Parra had the whole.
That's the person who comes
thing
to
that he did. Yeah.
I am too young for that.
He would, like, mess with both of his batting glove straps. It was wild.
He would, like, take both of his gloves off, put them back on. He would stretch a little bit, do some yoga, read a book.
And then he'd get back. At that point, if I'm the pitcher, I'm like, dude, can I just throw the pitch already? Like, I'm ready to.
Yeah.
Yeah, so last and probably the most drastic change out of all of these will be taking place in the low A Southeast, which is where the Mets do have the St. Lucie Mets. So we will be affected by this. So in addition to the limit on pickoff moves that they will be subject to, robot umpires will finally be making their official debut. Major League Baseball is going to be deploying Hawkeye tracking system to measure balls and strikes, and it's going to deliver an audio cue to the umpire behind the plate, and then he's going to base his call of ball or strike based off of that. The technology, it's been used in the Atlantic League in 2019 and then the Arizona Fall League later that year, so it's been tested.
Didn't someone get thrown out in the AFL for arguing with the robot? I forget who.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's been tested. They've deemed that it's accurate, so, you know, whatever. This is a thing where in the minor leagues, I don't really have a problem with it, but I would if it's implemented in the major leagues. I think that in the minor leagues, you want to see a consistent strike zone so a guy can better develop his zone awareness, you know, the hitter, or the pitcher can, you know, kind of figure out how to command it to different parts of the zone consistently, whatever. Whereas in the major leagues, I do appreciate that, you know, you could have, you know, a Greg Maddux kind of artist expand the zone here and there a little bit and kind of get those calls on the edges and everything like that. So I'm of two minds of this rule.
So first off, we should say that people that know more about this tech than us that I've seen talk about it on Twitter or elsewhere have raised some concerns that the technology is not as robust as we've been led to believe just yet.
I would not be surprised at that.
Yeah.
Major League Baseball lied about something? Come on.
We'd also have to discuss the fact that the strike zone as described in the rule book is not the strike zone as it is currently called. And you'd probably need to either tweak the rule book or accept the fact that there's going to be an adjustment period where everyone is like, what the fuck? This isn't what the strike zone is. In terms of like actual effect on the game, I'm a little torn. I really like the idea of catcher framing. Like, I think that's a cool skill to have, and really interesting research went into discovering that that was a thing or quantifying the effect of that. And this would effectively remove that. On the other hand, I really, really don't need any more games called by Angel Hernandez or Buckner or Wendelstedt or any of these other clowns who are blind as a bat and think everyone is at the ballpark to see them. And this would largely remove that. So at the same time, you could just remove that if you, you know, fired the bad umpires, but we that's not happening.
Or at least not put them behind the plate.
Yeah. Mm. Like how Angel Hernandez has a job is beyond me at this point, honestly.
I don't know. It's a tough one. This one would fundamentally change the game more than anything else, too.
Yeah.
So I think this is something that is worth exploring, but I think it's something you have to be really careful about implementing, because like we talk about baseball alienating its fan base a lot. Well, not us, but like we as like a online baseball fans. But this could potentially like really piss people off and get people to not, because it's just like, I don't know, man. Like, the human element is gone at that point, and then, like, and from a development side, all of a sudden, the pitch that was a strike in the minors every time, because it's a robot is not in the next level, and what if you built your whole repertoire around? Like, there's a lot of stuff that goes, there's a lot of variables for this one, more so than the pickoffs, because if the pickoffs don't work, you could just be like, we're not doing the pickoffs anymore, you know? Like, having an actual robot ump is a big deal.
Has there been any other sport, any, you know, major U.S. sport that, or even international sport, I know you guys follow soccer, that has done something like this, that has implemented a rule using, you know, technology or whatever that has really fundamentally or has the potential to fundamentally change things.
So in soccer, VAR, which is their video, I think it's assistant referee is the full acronym.
Yeah.
It's changed how the game's played because like things that you, so like it'll change, it'll call goals offside when a dude is like, his literal toe is offside. And they'll be like, no, he's offside because a human can't see that. Like, it's not possible for a human to pick that out. But VAR, would you put the headset on in the video and you'll see the lines. And the lines say he's offside. Like, there's no disputing that the line says he's offside. And they'll be like, well, that's not a goal. And that was a goal for hundreds of years before that. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, like, it's fundamentally changed the game. And most fans hate it. Like, most fans are not happy that that's in soccer. Especially in, like, for people who follow the Premier League, it's a talking point almost every week.
See, but that's something that could be tuned, right?
Yes.
This gets back to the point that the strike zone that is called is not the strike zone that is in the rule books. The offsides rule that is called or was called previously is not the offsides rule that is in the rule books. By the letter of the law, your one toe is offsides, you are offsides.
Yep.
So when you have greater precision, you need to adjust the rules accordingly. It needs to be, okay, you need to be 2 feet past the lowest defender. Or in baseball's case, the strike zone extends not all the way up to your chest, because Lord knows that's not called a strike anymore. It's more to your waist. So I think that element is manageable. Baseball, more than any other sport, has the fighting with umpires, though, right? Like, that doesn't happen in other sports.
It's basically legal to do so, like, to an extent.
Right. Like, you'll obviously have a Bill Belichick yelling at a line judge or whatever, right? Or somebody in basketball getting teed up, whatever. But in baseball, it's just like, for better or worse, a batter like losing their shit with the home plate umpire is maybe not normal, but not unusual.
It's distinctly part of the game of the like the Terry Collins clip, the ass
in the jackpot.
Like, that was one of the most, like, for better or for worse, viral clips that MLB's had in a long time, and like. That's just such a part of the game that would definitely be gone. Because you're going to go argue with the home plate umpire? He's going to be like, I don't know. Like,
go over and take a bat and start smashing the CPU.
Like, Bender told me backstage. Like, you know what I mean?
Like, if Bender's calling the game, we have some problems.
You do not want to argue with Bender.
Impending para un bending. I mean, and that's a trade-off, right? Is I don't have the answer to this. Is that a good part of the game? I don't know. I've enjoyed fights with umpires, and other times it makes me just fucking furious because there are blatantly obvious calls that they get wrong. Do you remember, I don't know if you guys remember, this is a clip that pops up on YouTube a lot of the times in worst calls ever compilations. Do you remember that pitch that Joe Nathan threw to Ben Zobrist in Texas maybe 7-8 years ago? The ball's like 3 feet outside, gets called strike three to end the game, and even Joe Nathan's walking off the mound like, ah, that's a strike.
I mean, even the whenever I watch clips of 2015 and Familiar strikes out Fowler at the end of the game to win the pennant, that's a ball. Like, that's not even close. And he rings him up, strike three, and Fowler's at home plate. Like, dude, what?
Yeah, at least that game was like 8-1.
I'm pretty sure that's why he called it too. Because
But that there are plenty of instances where it's a close game, and that shit matters.
No hitters have been lost from bad calls.
Right.
That's another thing too. I feel like it's definitely an unwritten rule that, like, if it's a lopsided game, you're getting into the later innings, it's kind of unsaid that the umpires are going to skew in favor of the team that is blowing the other one out just because they kind of want to let's go here.
I mean, I literally have a story from when I was an umpire about that. I was doing a girls' softball game, and it was a rain out type of thing where they were doing practice stuff, and the catcher and the batter were like, we want to go home. And I was like, I got you. And I just started calling almost everything strikes. And the coach was like losing it. And the batter and the catcher were like, thank you. Cause they were like 14-year-olds, and they were just like, it's a Tuesday, I have homework, can we go home? And I was like, don't worry about it, I don't want to be here either. And, like, I expanded that strike zone so bad. And the coach is like, what are you doing? And I was just like, they're strikes, I'm sorry. And he's like, no, they're not! He's, like, screaming at me. It was so and it's stuff like that that would be lost. Like, obviously, that's a very small scale thing. But, like,
Thomas the crooked ump.
Oh, God, yeah. It was. I mean, I didn't want to be there. We were playing on grass outside of a rain-soaked diamond. Like,
Let's
go home. You know what I mean? But It's just funny stuff like that, that obviously I wouldn't have a robot ump at doing girls' softball games when they were, like, in high school, but still.
I mean, we're again asking the question, though, like, is that good or is that bad? I don't know the answer to that. Like, would I like strikes to be called more accurately? Yeah. Do I also occasionally enjoy a fight with an umpire? Also, yeah.
Is catching framing fun? Kind of yes. Person
who occasionally enjoys an on-field brawl too, which I know is my Neanderthal brain. But
baseball brawls are the best.
Yeah, because every other sport, guys are wearing helmets or whatever. It's fucking stupid. Anyway, I don't know what the answer is here. I'm
happy I don't have to make the decision.
Pretty much.
The long and short of this.
The only thing I can say for certain is that they are 100% going to have to sit down and have a lengthy discussion about what they want the strike zone to be, because it's not what's currently written. If they want to do this, they need to deal with that first, and I don't really have confidence in them to realize that and or address it.
Also, we had this whole conversation, didn't talk about how umpires, their jobs would be changing significantly now. And
right, they're just there to
make
a statement, yeah.
Yeah, and, like, that's certainly not what they want.
I'm kind of indifferent on the concerns of umpires. I don't really give a shit. Like, they're there to facilitate the game. They're not the focus.
I mean, sure, but they're unionized. Like,
and I would, like, generally a pro-union person, but the union is also the reason Angel Hernandez and C.B. Buckner and who was the dude, the larger dude? With the,
Joe West.
Joe West, right? Like, these people should not have jobs, but they still do because the umpires union. Anyway.
So we're going to get a situation where the umpires are going to be like, they took our jobs.
I mean, literally, yes, that's what's going to probably if this gets because they'll be mad. Like, I'm sure every umpire in the league is like, the robot umpire is stupid because it's one for one taking their job away. Because
I call every strike correctly. No, you don't.
Yeah. Now, here's the most important question I ask. Who is going to be the first team that hacks into the network and starts disrupting things? Astros.
There's just pitches right down the middle.
Wait. It's hacking. Cardinals.
Oh, the Cardinals.
Oh, that's
right. The Astros. Cardinals. So perfect.
I mean, they hacked by going to the dude's desk and saying, hey, he wrote his password down. And it's the same one. But, yes, it's the Cardinals. Mm. The Cardinal way. The new Cardinal way.
The new Cardinal way.
The Mets would try and get, like, a Trojan horse virus.
The Mets would try and get it backwards and make it worse for themselves.
They go winless at home. And they're like, what happened? We don't know. We tried to cheat. It didn't work.
Typical Mets. Well, those would be the Wilpon Mets. We're past those days now. Well, speaking of Wilpons, I guess that's a good segue to the Wilpon of the week this week. And Lucas, I know you don't do wrestling or anything like that, but you should be able to follow here because the
Lucas, Wilpon, this is very funny.
Okay. Yeah, the Wilpon of the week goes to All Elite Wrestling this week. So basically, not even once, but twice this week, they had two massive fails. First one would be their pay-per-view, where they had the exploding barbed wire death match. Now, Lucas, as
what
a person,
in the fuck, Lucas, is an exploding barbed wire death match?
Well, it's pretty self-explanatory.
Yes. If someone told you what is an exploding barbed wire death match, what would you picture an exploding barbed wire death match to be?
Okay, so do you guys remember the original, not like the first series of Spider-Man movies with Toby, what's his name?
Maguire.
Maguire, right? And in the first one, to test out his powers, he goes to a cage match, right? Yes, the guy's like, yes. I've got you for 3 minutes. I basically imagine that, but with like the big sparkler things on at the corners. That's what I'm picturing here.
You're pretty close.
Great.
So that basically, you know, you have, because it's barbed wire, you have barbed wire around the rings and exploding. So if you touch the barbed wire and then you have like pyro explosion kind of things go off. And they built this whole match is that there was a half an hour limit or whatever, and that at the end of the match the ring was going to explode. It was going to be terrible. Like, giant detonation.
Oh, no.
Oh, man.
Wait. I've got to interject here. Have you guys watched Always Sunny in Philadelphia?
I have not.
Do you know the scene where he's talking about being the trash man? Because no. They're going to put on a wrestling show? No? That's okay, awesome. Never mind then. No. That's going to be a disaster. No. It won't, because it's not real.
No. So, basically, something clearly went wrong because the horrible deadly explosion turned out to be just kind of some sparklers, like 4th of July sparklers.
Yeah.
That like you would hand a little kid.
It was really, really bad.
And a poof of smoke. And that was basically it.
Like it was bad to the point that when I watched it, I was like, oh, so the whole time he was just messing with him. Like he wasn't going to blow the ring up. And then they sold it in the ring. Like it happened because they had to keep going. And I was like, oh boy, they messed up.
Yeah, it was quite a mess up. It's basically the equivalent of like the, you know, Will Patton saying, this year is going to be the year, and then...
And then just falls flat, yeah.
Yeah, everything falls flat. But not just that. But then, literally, a few days later, simultaneously while they're introducing a new wrestler, and then they're developing another story, they had major audio problems. And instead of actually hearing, like, the wrestling announcers, you heard an NBA feed from somewhere. So you heard squeakers and buzzers, defense chants.
Yeah. So they piped in the wrong audio, I guess, or got it all mixed up. So it just messed up.
Was this, like, in the stadium, or was this on, like, the TV
broadcast? No, on TV.
It was on the TV broadcast.
Okay. I'm assuming it's a TNT issue more than it was AEW issue.
That sounds like purely a broadcast thing.
It was just, like, right after that. To do that, have that happen.
Yeah, that's a big malfunction span of like a few days after your last big malfunction. That's a terrible look.
Please update the sign to how many days since we messed up to zero.
Pretty much. I'm sure that the Mets clubhouse used to have one of those kinds of signs.
Days without a pitcher getting injured and not saying anything about it. Zero.
That, we might be back to that with Carrasco, but crossing my fingers, not
he threw today. There. He's fine.
Okay. That doesn't mean anything with the Mets.
No, it does not.
Well, if anybody has any questions, comments, whatever, you can shoot us an email at our email address from complextoqueens@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter and shoot us questions there. I'm at Steve Saipa. Lucas is at ElVlahos343. Thomas is at SadMetSeasonSZN, and Ken, who is not able to join us, is at KenLavin91. Subscribe to the podcast or get your podcast from, rate and review it, and of course, we thank you for listening, and we will be back next week. So until then, love the Mets. Love the Mets.